It's just after 6 o'clock here on 88.7 WLUW Chicago. And now, ladies and gentlemen, broadcasting from the 100-watt preservation-worthy radio station, 88.7, and podcasting exclusively on OutsideTheLoopRadio.com, coming to you from the OTL bunker somewhere in Chicago. This is another edition of Outside the Loop Radio, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you oh so much, little announcer guy. Welcome to Outside the Loop Radio. This is show number 123, and I am your host, Mike Stevens.
And I'm your executive producer, Andy Herman.
Welcome back to the program. This is a show that airs every Friday at 6 p.m. right here on 88.7 WLUW. And we're happy to be here each week. And of course, OutsideTheLoopRadio.com is our lovely website. Andy, what can our great listeners find on OutsideTheLoopRadio.com?
You can find everything having to do with this program you're listening to right now, including all the audio from the past shows. We have pictures, and of course, we have text and links to all our guests and all the topics we talk about.
I should probably go there and check it out one of these days.
I think you should. It'd be nice if you visited every now and then.
OutsideTheLoopRadio.com. The little announcer guy does. Intern Biff does.
He loves it.
I got to get back on the horse, you know?
Yeah.
Well, this is a very special show, believe it or not, because this 123rd edition of the program is another themed edition of the show. And this week, we are going to theme the program, or I guess we're saying that we're subtitling the program.
Yes.
Chicago, Out of Sight, Out of Mind. And what that means is that we will be looking for the next half hour at issues about preservation in our city. That means specifically that we will be taking a further look at preserving structures, preserving buildings in the city of Chicago. And really, Chicago is a great city in terms of architecture, and there are a lot of buildings that give this city character. And from neighborhood to neighborhood, depending where you live, where you go, people, in addition to identifying where they're at with the grid system here in Chicago, they also say, oh, you know, I'm right by... Well, you know what? You know what's funny? I can't say this anymore because it was knocked down a few years ago. The Rainbow Roller Rink. I don't know why that popped in my head, but now there are condos where the Rainbow Roller Rink on Clark used to be.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the Rainbow.
The legendary Rainbow.
But see, that's what we're talking about. These are buildings that are legendary in Chicago, and some aren't necessarily infamous, but they identify or help to identify a certain neighborhood or a certain area of the city. And man, with the trends these days, a lot of those buildings are coming down. So that's what we're taking a look at this week on Outside the Loop Radio. Again, our special Chicago Out of Sight, Out of Mind show. And this actually kind of ties into what happened earlier this week. Preservation Chicago, which is a local preservation, architectural preservation group.
Right.
They released their list that they call the Chicago 7. They do this each year, and they recently, like I said earlier this week, released the Chicago 7 for 2009. And basically, if you don't know what that is, it's a list with 7 buildings, with 7 structures that are in danger of demolition for this coming year. And it just so happens, and Andy, you can back me up on this, we started working on this show a few weeks ago.
We did, yes.
And this week, the Preservation Chicago stuff hits, and it turns out that two of our stories this week tie into two of those buildings that are on the Preservation Chicago 7 in danger list of 2009. And it just literally, it was a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
We did not plan it like this, and when it came out, we said, oh boy, but you know what, that's a good thing. So we've got a lot to do on this edition of Outside the Loop. Andy, later in the program, what will we be doing? And I should say that the OTL roving microphone got a workout this week.
Oh, it sure did. We have a couple of live-to-tape reports. Coming up in a bit, we'll hear one of those right outside of St. Boniface Church. And before that, we're going to check in with a Chicago expatriate who misses his now-demolished bar and bacon.
Yes, what a tease. What a radio tease, Andy. And first, we will go on location again with the OTL roving microphone to Michael Reese Hospital and chat with three individuals who are really interested in preserving Chicago's infrastructure. So stay tuned for that. The local music on this week's edition of the show, and by the way, each week we feature local music, comes from the band The Eli Story. You can check them out online, theelistory.com. That's E-L-I. That's how you spell Eli, Andy.
Go figure.
Theelistory.com. They are a trio, and they are performing tomorrow night at Beat Kitchen. That's in Roscoe Village, 2100 West Belmont. It is their CD release show. So that's coming up tomorrow, 9:30 at the Beat Kitchen at p.m. Don't get there for Bloody Marys and eggs.
Not going to happen this time, eh?
No, sir. So we'll listen to some music from The Eli Story right here on Outside the Loop Radio, the special Chicago Out of Sight, Out of Mind show. I'm your host, Mike Steven, in the OTL bunker with executive producer Andy Herman, right here on WLUW. Here I am on the near south side of Chicago and standing here on this crisp January day with three individuals who are really into preserving Chicago and the specifically buildings in Chicago. I'm here with Jacob Kaplan, Corinne Aquino, and Serhii Krutsky of Forgotten Chicago. The website is ForgottenChicago.com. Guys, thanks so much for taking the time to, you know, to hang out in front of a hospital today.
No problem. Great problem. To be here. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about where we are right now, because we are outside of Michael Reese Hospital. We are right outside of the campus of this hospital. And this is actually now kind of a big, I don't know if you want to call it a controversy, or this is the site of an upcoming preservation battle, because as I understand it, this land has now been purchased by the city of Chicago, and this is supposed to be the Olympic Village if the Olympics ever do get here in 2016. Is that pretty much the crux of this?
Correct. It's also, I think, it just recently came out that it's a TIF district as well. So there's the additional government corruption angle to be played on this one.
The tax increment financing districts that we've heard a lot about, they're all over Chicago. But specifically, what is it about this area, this campus, this hospital campus, that is, quite frankly, worth preserving and not knocking down for an Olympic Village?
Well, you have many different structures here, including the main building, which is the Chicago School masterpiece by the firm of Schmidt, Garden & Martin, and it's one of the few Chicago School hospital buildings remaining. You've got great mid-century buildings by the firm of Lobel, Schlossman & Bennett that are definitely worth preserving, great examples of mid-century architecture in Chicago. So we just kind of want to see it reused as the Olympic Village site. There's a lot of opportunities for reuse here instead of tearing down everything. It seems like a large waste.
So then, just to get this clear, you're not saying that this can't be the Olympic Village. You're saying just don't tear everything down.
Well, I could probably think of maybe 20 good alternatives for an Olympic Village other than this location, but I guess the proximity to the Loop is part of what makes it desirable as a site. So, you know, based on that, you could reuse the site for an Olympic Village and not just have it be entirely clear-cut and then just rebuilt.
I was going to ask you, why do you think that they chose this site for a proposed Olympic Village? I know, like you said, Corinne, it is close to the Loop, but aren't there a lot of other spaces in Chicago that might lend themselves better to an Olympic Village?
My thought was, my first thought when I heard about the Olympic Village plan a couple years ago was to use the Southworks, the huge Southworks plant that the land is vacant. It's on the south side, about near 83rd and Ewing. That's one of the largest vacant lots in the city, and it's just sitting there unused completely. Here you have a lot of great architecture, and these buildings haven't been vacant for that long. It's some of these, including the building I'm looking at right now. I forgot the name of it. Do you know of it, Jake? Singer Pavilion, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
That's still in use. We were just over there and talked to the security guard, and he told us not to go into any of the buildings. So, yeah, there's a lot of great mid-century architecture here, and there's no real need to knock it down for
Is that unique to a hospital? Because I think most people, when they think of hospitals, architecture isn't something that jumps out in their minds. But what you're saying is that there is a lot of good architecture here at the Michael Reese Hospital.
Yes, and that's what makes it so worthy of preservation, is that a lot of hospital architecture typically is pretty uninspired. But here you have like some of the best examples of hospital architecture in the city and probably anywhere in the country. You have buildings that make great use of light, and which hospitals typically are oftentimes are devoid of, and they're just they're great examples of their type of building. So we just think that they're definitely worthy of preservation.
The designers of this hospital were actually going for an uninstitutional look. They wanted patients to not feel like they were in an institution when they were here.
Yeah, what's the history of this hospital? How old is it? When did this come around?
The hospital itself, actually, after the Great Fire of 1871, there was a void. The only Jewish hospital in the city was burned, obviously. So this wealthy real estate developer, Michael Reese, left money in his will for a Jewish hospital in the city, and it finally got built when he died in the late 1870s. And it's the oldest building on the site, actually only dates from 1905, the main building, but it's actually been on this site since the 1870s, and it's a very historic hospital. There's been many medical innovations here, like the first incubator station for premature babies. I mean, there's a lot of history here. So
certainly. So you said that you were over there chatting with the security guards, and you said don't go inside. My question to you guys is, do we know what's inside? Is it still functioning, or what's inside now?
I think there's parts of it that are marginally in use, but there's also parts of it that are entirely abandoned, aren't there?
Yeah.
Certain
yeah.
buildings.
We've been inside the main building, and we know people who have gone in a lot more of it, but I think the only remaining functions here are administrative. But we're not entirely sure about that. We've not confirmed that, but that's what it seems to be.
And it seems to be slowly shutting down. We thought it was supposed to be completely shut down by the end of this year, and they're probably still kind of just closing and working on closing things up, basically.
So even if the Olympics don't come to Chicago, this land has been purchased by the city, and if the Olympics don't come here, do we know what's going to happen? Has the city said or made any indication one way or the other what they're going to do with this land?
Yeah, they've actually said that even if the Olympics don't show up, they want to make it into a mixed-use housing development. So, I mean, even if the Olympics, we don't end up having them, we can still reuse all these buildings for a housing complex. I mean, there's a lot of good architecture here to reuse, whether we get the Olympics or not.
So you guys run ForgottenChicago.com, and what inspired you to get that website going? And for those who don't know what the website is all about, what's like a brief synopsis of what you guys do on ForgottenChicago.com?
It's a look at architecture, infrastructure, signs, various aspects of the built environment that aren't studied by architecture historians or aren't considered great. Just we try to look at the overlooked stuff.
So how'd you guys get involved doing this? What inspired you to get this going?
Basically, we've been interested in this sort of stuff in Chicago. We went to high school here and everything, and we always thought, why is there no site like this for Chicago? There were similar sites for cities like Detroit and St. Louis that kind of look at forgotten architecture and infrastructure and things like that. So finally, when nothing came up, we decided we're going to start it ourselves. So that's what we did.
And really, I think it's a good website because these are things, these buildings, it's not necessarily buildings, as you said, Suri, but these certain elements of the city, in addition to the people, make up what we know as Chicago. And boy, we're seeing a lot of development, now, and we've seen a lot of development over the past 5-10 years, and slowly we're eradicating those elements. So what you guys are trying to do is preserve that online. And online, if you go to ForgottenChicago.com, there's a lot of pictures and a lot of in-depth writing. You guys take some time and research all this stuff, don't you?
I'd say research is probably the bulk of it. And research consists of looking at not only like many online and like hard copy sources, but just miles and miles and miles of driving around like every week, just looking for things and taking pictures.
The most involved research we do is actually simply observation. I mean, we just go to these places, try to sit here for a while, analyze it, discuss it. You have to go and observe. You can't just be an armchair researcher. It doesn't quite work.
Right. Well, you guys are getting up and you're getting out, and I'm sure you've discovered a lot of cool things by actually getting up and on your weekends going out and looking and actively searching for this. And I always think that You know, if you're really into the city, if you're into wherever you live, you got to get up and you got to get out and you got to check things out, because that's when you find out information that will blow your mind. And in the case of you guys, you've really uncovered a lot of stuff and you've documented a lot of really neat things on ForgottenChicago.com. Guys, I appreciate you taking the time out of your day of research and photography to talk about what's going on with your website and, of course, the battle for Michael Reese Hospital. Guys, thanks so much again. Jacob Kaplan, Corinne Aquino, and Serhii Krutsky of ForgottenChicago.com. Guys, thanks and keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Andy Herman, executive producer of Outside the Loop on Loyola University's Community Radio, 88.7 WLUW.
And this is your host, Mike Steven, and right now we're listening to the local music of the band The Eli Story. You can check them out online, theelistory.com. That's Eli spelled E-L-I, as we learned earlier, right,
yes,
Andy?
Yes, you're very smart.
theelistory.com. They're playing tomorrow night. That is at, yeah, where is that?
The Beat Kitchen.
Thank you. God, I'm so glad you're here. The Beat Kitchen, tomorrow night at 9:30 p.m. That's January the 31st. It is the Eli Stories CD release show, so that's happening tomorrow. If you would like us to feature some of your music, if you're a local band or you're a local musician, you can get in touch with us through our website at OutsideTheLoopRadio.com. I get kind of flustered when I say it because it's just so exciting, Andy.
It is, and I'm glad you get excited about it.
OutsideTheLoopRadio.com. This is our special Chicago Out of Sight, Out of Mind show, where we deal with preservation issues. And you heard that live-to-tape report from the Michael Reese Hospital.
Beautiful.
Thank you, sir. We've got another one coming up. But before that, I thought we would talk to someone who's been on this radio show before, and this is a transplanted Chicagoan.
Mm-hmm.
He now lives in Ventura, California.
Okay.
But he got in touch with me a couple weeks ago after we did our special Outside the Loop Bucktown show.
Yes.
And we learned about a bar in Bucktown, Chinaski's, or I think I'm saying that right, Chinaski's?
It's close.
Yeah, Chinaski's, I think. I don't know, I've got that dirty Chicago accent. It serves all-you-can-eat bacon.
Mm.
And this guy gets in touch with me and he says, "What the hell is your problem, Mike? Why didn't you invoke the name of the prodigal son?" It doesn't matter that it wasn't in Bucktown. It was in Lincoln Park.
Okay.
But it used to serve all-you-can-eat bacon. So this guy is on the line with us right now. I almost said on the phone, but we've dialed him up with our special ISDN connection. He's part of the Outside the Loop California Bureau. Jason Matthews is back on the show. Jason, welcome back to Outside the Loop.
Thanks for having me.
You sound very excited.
Oh, I am. Anytime I get to talk about the Prodigal Son.
Yes, the Prodigal Son is the name of the bar, and it used to be on Halsted Street. And you used to frequent the Prodigal Son. It was actually at 2626 North Halsted. It burned down in 2003. But that bar used to serve all-you-can-eat bacon, didn't it?
Yeah, I used to live about four blocks away, and so I was in there about three, four times a week. And every Wednesday was free bacon night, and I was right out of college, so free bacon night meant free dinner night. And
right.
And they also served they had a pretty wide selection of beers that you normally wouldn't see, just really bizarre German beers, and they were all pretty expensive, but they also served $2 cans of PBR, and that was before PBR was, you know, $4 a can, before the cool kids started drinking it. So it was it was more an effort to make sure that anybody can go in there and, you know, have a good time without having to blow their whole paycheck, which we usually did anyway.
Well, didn't they have, I was in there a few times, didn't they have a deep fryer where they would like fry anything?
They had the deep fryer for the bacon to start off, but then every Thursday nights they would have a deep fry anything for a dollar night, and
any
food item you brought in there. I mean, they wouldn't like fry a shoe, but anything you brought in there, they would deep fry it. They eventually discontinued it, but they had it for quite a long time. But their French fries started tasting like various items they were frying on Thursday nights, so they had to put a stop to it.
Well, you love the bar because, as you said, you went there three to four times a week, but you also made a lot of friends at the bar, too. I mean, you still talk to people that you made friends with at the Prodigal Son.
yeah, I ended up going to one of the owner's weddings. Another friend of mine from that bar started out as my arch nemesis because they used to have a NTN trivia night. And being the cool guy that I was there all the time playing that. And we were bitter rivals until the bar burned down. And then we started dating for a while. But
you don't like to talk about that. Right?
Right. No.
I understand. Well, I think it's interesting because – you know, bars like that are now, if they don't burn down, sometimes they get bought out and now they put condos up, which is what happened in the case of the Prodigal Son. There are now condos there. And that is kind of destroying a little bit of the character of the city.
Yeah, I could agree with that to a point, although I would say, like you said, in this case, it was just it was arson, but they're not sure who did it. It wasn't as if the city ran them out or the landlord sold. There are condos there now, so that's a painful sight every time you drive by.
Yeah, it really is. And of course, as we've talked about on the show before, that's what's happening across Chicago. And the Prodigal Son is just one example of that. I'm sorry for your loss, Jason. It was a good bar. I saw a lot of very cool shows in the back room there.
And, yeah, they had live music 7 nights a week until the city made them stop, and then they had to go down to the weekend. But yeah, it was quite a bar. You don't see a lot of bars like that, especially in Lincoln Park.
Well, long live the Prodigal Son. It burned down in 2003, and Jason Matthews is a transplanted Chicagoan who still has a special place in his greasy heart for the Prodigal Son. Jason, I thank you so much, and good luck in California, okay?
I love you, Mike.
I love you as well, Jason. That's Jason Matthews, and we've got more to do here on Outside the Loop Radio as we shut down the ISDN line there. Andy, we have another live-to-tape report coming up that I did, this time talking about another local piece of architecture, St. Boniface Catholic Church. Stay tuned for that. You're listening to Outside the Loop Radio as we listen to more music from the Eli Story right here on WLUW.
They say I'll be one of the few.
Mike Steven here on the corner of Chestnut and Noble in the West Town area, right outside of St. Boniface Church. I'm standing here with Jonathan Fine, who is the Executive Director of Preservation Chicago. Jonathan, thanks for taking the time, and thanks for keeping me warm, because it's really cold out right now.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to talk about St. Boniface, one of my all-time favorite buildings.
This building, first of all... this has been around since the turn of the 20th century, hasn't it?
Yeah, it was built about 1902, 1904, that era.
And then for the last 20 years, this church has been essentially abandoned, hasn't it?
Yeah, I believe in 1990, the Archdiocese closed it. It was an active congregation, and on 2 weeks' notice, they closed the congregation and boarded up the church, and it's been vacant ever since.
And now, as I understand it, this building is in danger of coming down.
Yes, about 10 years ago, before there was a Preservation Chicago, a group of community activists got together and formed a coalition to save it, stop it from being demolished, because the Archdiocese wanted to demolish it 10 years ago. And through various permutations and efforts, we are still pretty much back to where we were back in 1999, which is unfortunate because there have been many efforts to try to preserve this church. In December of 2008, the Archdiocese applied for a demolition permit. And because the building's rated orange, we have an automatic 90-day hold, which will expire in March, early March. So the clock is ticking on this beautiful building, and there's not much time left for it.
So then does the Archdiocese of Chicago still own this land?
They do own it. They own the land and the building. And the latest effort has been there's been a group of Coptic Christians who have been interested in purchasing the building for the past couple of years. The alderman wants to see it preserved. The city's planning.
Which alderman is that?
That would be Walter Burnett, alderman of the 27th okay. Ward. And we met with him last week, and, you know, he very much wants to see a solution. I mean, nobody wants to see a vacant lot on this corner, especially when you're talking about, you know, it's right across from Eckerd Park. It's right in the heart of a vibrant community. And, you know, the last thing we need is another vacant lot. And in this economy, you know, it could be vacant for decades.
I'm Mike Steven here on Outside the Loop Radio, standing on the corner of Chestnut and Noble in Westtown, right outside of St. Boniface. I'm talking with Jonathan Fine, who is the Executive Director of Preservation Chicago. PreservationChicago.org is the website.
Let me ask you this question, Jonathan. Why should we save this building? Why should we be concerned?
We as a society? Why should we be?
Right.
Well, I mean, look, great societies build great buildings, and unenlightened societies destroy great buildings. And if we call ourselves an enlightened society, then we have an obligation and a duty to preserve our architecture, to preserve our heritage, to preserve our culture. And this building tells a tremendous story. It tells stories about Chicago. It tells stories about charity. It tells stories about community. It tells stories about great architects, about great craftsmen.
Even before this building existed, St. Boniface was really important to the Chicago community, even before the Chicago fire.
Right.
And then this building was erected. And like you said, it really was a central place for a particular community in Chicago.
Exactly. And it's interesting because ask any old-time Chicago Catholic, and if you ask them, where are you from or where did you grow up, they never tell you, I grew up on, you know, the corner of such and such, or I grew up in this neighborhood. They always tell you what parish they grew up in, because the churches were so dominant. Even if you weren't a Catholic, you still said, I grew up in this parish or that parish. Even if these buildings no longer serve the function for which they were built to serve, they still serve a community function. And you know, as a community activist, a community organizer, I have gone to countless meetings in the basement of churches. They serve a community, and they really should be preserved. You know, there's a public policy debate about church and state and tax dollars and who's going to pay for these and who's going to maintain them. And these are all really good questions, and nobody seems to have any really good answers. But like I said, if we are a progressive society, we will figure out a creative solution to the wrecker ball. Because, you know, we're standing in front of St. Boniface, but we could be standing in front of 20 vacant churches and synagogues anywhere in any Chicago neighborhood, because this problem is going to persist again and again and again until we as a community, as we as a city, and we as a society solve the problem of what do we do with our vacant religious structures.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's interesting because this particular community, you have a bunch of different churches not that far away from each
other. Right, in fact, standing here, you can just look at the steeples over here. You know, you've got Holy Innocence over here, and you've got,
I know St. Stanislaus is over there.
St. Stanislaus Kostka, and this is Holy Trinity. You can just stand and just, you know, do a panorama and,
right,
and count the church steeples. Luckily, these are all vibrant congregations, but, you know, this one, this poor thing is all by itself and needs some help.
And like you said, this St. Boniface could easily be any one of those other parishes.
Absolutely.
And it strikes me because I grew up hearing about St. Stanislaus where my grandma went. Uh-huh. So like you just said, if you were from Chicago, if you had relatives who are from Chicago, this is very much part of your family.
Absolutely. And again, when you destroy a building, you destroy history. You destroy that collective memory. And these buildings tell stories. And it's such a loss. It's such a tragedy. And it's so unnecessary. But, you know, we have to find a way. We have to find the funds. We have to find the resources. Just to say, oh, well, it's cost too much to repair. I mean, that would never fly in Europe. I mean, we wouldn't be tearing cathedrals down in Europe. You don't see the destruction of religious properties anywhere else in this world other than in the United States.
And people can check out preservationchicago.org if they're interested in St. Boniface. Plus, that website has a whole lot of information about endangered structures in Chicago.
Yeah, and in fact, I wish we had more space to put everything that's endangered on there. But there's a whole host of information on our website. And we also are a membership organization. So if you're sitting around the house wondering what you can do about preservation, join us. We need your support. And every dollar we get from the general public is a dollar that keeps our voice independent and continues to allow us to advocate for these beautiful historic buildings.
Again, that website, preservationchicago.org. Jonathan Fine is the executive director of Preservation Chicago, and we've been talking right outside of St. Boniface Church on the corner of Noble and Chestnut in Westtown. Jonathan, thank you for coming out here, and now get inside and get warm.
You too. Thanks, Mike.
And that just about does it. OTL show number 123, Chicago, out of sight, out of mind, in the books. I'm your host, Mike Steven.
And I'm your executive producer, Andy Herman.
We hope you enjoyed the program, and like we said, ForgottenChicago.com and PreservationChicago.org are just two websites you can visit if you're interested in preservation issues in Chicago. And this is really a hot topic, and like we said earlier, on PreservationChicago.org, the Chicago 7 list for 2009 is up. And if we keep tearing these buildings down, like Jonathan Fine said, how do we call ourselves a progressive society? I thought that was really interesting when he said that. Well, thanks for listening. And Andy, thank you for all your help.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Mike. Well done on the live-to-tape reports.
Thank you. I'll tell you something. It was not, what's the word, warm when we were outside.
A little windy, too, perhaps?
A little bit. Thank you so much for listening. Copyright 2009.
Albert James Productions.
Special thanks to DJ Goldie G, Dave Goldman, who is the OTL theme song composer. Lawyer Danny is our legal counsel. Stay tuned for Slacky J and the Reggae Vibe Show coming up right now on this Friday evening. We'll be back on the air again next Friday at 6. Thanks for listening to WLUW
Chicago.